Begin laser ignition sequence.
Begin laser ignition!
And that will do it. The beam will be lit. Sacramento, stand up.
Hunter, can you guess who Luka Doncic was talking shit to in the front row of Friday night's loss to the Mavs?
Oh, I wonder who. Maybe the guy who fucking picked a fucking stretch four over the greatest talent the NBA has seen in the last 10 years. Oh, is it that Vlade Divac guy? Is that who you're talking about?
Do I sniff a rant coming?
Oh, dude.
Smells like a rant.
Smells real ranty. Should I unleash my rant?
Please.
All right.
Please.
All right, people. So, it's a bad week. It's a bad time. It's a sad time, as Jersey Jerry would say.
It's a sad day. It's a bad day.
Bad fucking week. Topped off by just the most appropriate ending to how this two-game stretch could have happened. So all of you guys that watch the game and follow on Twitter, we know in the closing seconds of the second game, Luka hit a couple free throws and got hot mic'd. And of course, the hot mic was directly pointed at everybody's least favorite Sacramento Kings center, Vlade Divac. Luka hits the second free throw. He's going back to
this
the huddle.
This is a Brad Miller podcast.
This is a Brad Miller podcast. Fucking A right it is. He's walking back to
That's
the bench.
That's our childhood center.
And he goes, Vlade. And he goes, hey, that's the guy that you should have drafted me, Vlade. He goes, that's the guy that should have drafted me. And I'm like, oh my God, dude. He said it out loud. This motherfucker. It's just so bad that all of these players are so active and like, no, and they're petty. They're petty like us, man. And, it's just the spiel sounds like it's going to be focused at Luka, but this is going to be pointed out of Vec and Vlade Divac. And first off, I want to say I really do like how Vivek treats former players and how they're always welcome to be at the arena. And they're always like, we've since he's bought the team, it literally Mike Bibby, Bobby Jackson, Doug Christie, Vlade Divac, Brad Miller, Peja Stojakovic, all of those guys have been around the team and it's fucking awesome. But the one person that I got the biggest problem with, and it is just Mavs-centric, is why the fuck is Vlade Divac sitting courtside at the Mavs game? Makes no fucking sense. Vivek doesn't know how to read the fucking room. Like, it's like when he was sitting courtside at the Warriors game during their last title run, and you're just like, just like read the room, bro. Like, you do so many things good, but you just towed out Vlade fucking Divac in the most important game of the season. And Luka, Luka probably saw him when the game started and was like, oh dude, I'm about to cook these fucking fools because this guy said he was going to draft me and he didn't. But the point of this rant is that if you're a Kings fan and you're under 30 years of age, it is just absolutely no love for Vlade Divac. I know any older person that listens to this or Kings Twitter, it's always a caveat. It's always like, man, I love Vlade as a person. I loved Vlade as a player, but, and for me, and for many of us under the age of 30 that never watched Vlade play and never really just attached to him in that way, it's just nothing but pain with that guy, man. Like, I don't want to see his face. I don't want to see him courtside, especially when we're playing fucking Luka and we're in basketball fucking mediocrity this year. We're just stuck in the middle. And the only way that this team would have been any different was that if the most obvious draft pick in the last fucking 20 years was made by Vlade fucking Divac, this team would be on a completely different path. But nope, we had to watch two games this fucking week as Luka Doncic, the guy that should be a fucking Sacramento King, torched the Kings and not likely knocked them into the play-in for good this season. It's just fucking frustrating. And Vlade, you're just going to take the brunt of my anger, dude, because, I was pissed off. And then I saw you courtside and I kind of just was like, whatever, fuck it. I'm not worried about it. And then I saw that video afterwards of Luka just, oh, there's the guy that should have drafted me. I was like, fucking A, right, Luka, he should have drafted you. And all of us
so
know
sick,
it.
Dude.
No, dude, that was so sick. It's so fucking gross. It's so awesome that he called Vlade out. It's just yep. like, Kings fans, I know.
I'm on.
This is just too much hate. Are you on my side here, Caleb?
I got a number of things, but yes. Okay.
Fucking hell.
I think you're 100% right about Vlade. We got to give it up. I'm fucking sick of it. I'm sick of the 2002 Kings. I'm sick of it. I'm fucking sick of it. It's done. It's in the past. The 16 years. It's over. Get him out. I don't want, like, he is a huge, he is the reason that this franchise was even, actually, like, Vivek, since Vivek's got there, you know, say what you want about how bad optically he looks with hiring his daughter to be the GM of the Kings or the Stockton Kings and letting her, and she just dips halfway through the season because she had no experience going in from the 4-on-5 basketball to the basically sucking the Warriors' dicks every single chance that he can get. However, all of those bad optics and just not reading the room, like you said, I can put up with. This is the final straw. It's fucking done. I'm tired of being a fucking laughingstock. And Vlade Divac is another guy that had no business being in a GM position for a professional franchise and has no business being still around after you got fired. Like, you're right. I watched a little bit of Vlade. I don't have the same disdain because I did enjoy him as a player. I was just a sicko as a 4.5-year-old watching fucking Kings games and crying about it. So it,
I mean, fair enough.
There is it's still there, but at this point, man, you're right. It, like, that was 20 fucking years ago and he stunted the growth of this team and really probably robbed Sacramento of a potential championship. Cause let's be honest, you know, it's a toss up whether we'll get one in the next 10 or 15 years, especially with this group. If we had Luka Doncic in this group, I'd be very confident. I'd already been expecting the Kings to have one by now.
We'd be perennial finals contenders for every year that he's been here.
Absolutely. And so that's the frustrating thing that this is. We've been able to kind of sweep the Luka trauma, you know, and really suppress it for the last few years, and especially since the Kings got more relevant. But the fact that he put the nail on the coffin, quote unquote, I mean, I'm not ready to completely wave the white flag and throw in the towel because I do think we'll get to those takes later. But it is just, it's so much more painful that it happened this way. But also, I texted you this, like, I feel vindicated. This was that final, like, fuck you, Vlade.
Oh,
like,
I mean,
you've made me sick to my stomach. We were right. We wish we had this podcast at the time because we would have been literally had a Luka show every single day leading up to that draft. And
just never forget the day where we moved up to second in the lottery and I was at work and I was literally in the freezer box screaming, "We're going to draft Luka. Holy fuck, we're going to get Luka." And like that 3-month stretch of all of those rumors, the MPJ rumors and the Bagley decision was fucking bad enough. And then he was just a bad fucking general manager, man. And like, I just hate that out of all of the players,
pick swaps.
Yeah.
All the bullshit.
Out of all the players that sit courtside and have the closest relationship to this day with Vivek, it's still Vlade, dude. And like,
It's annoying.
And I think it's a Kings problem,
let
man.
It go,
like,
man.
Because we really, you know.
It's a Vivek problem. That's like, Vivek. Just someone has got to get to Vivek and say, look, you're hurting the business of this team by keeping this guy around. Like, honestly, I'm tired of the old boomer heads that, like, get them out. We need a new fucking generation. And I'm really annoyed with this fan base right now because we're spending all this time. We want to hate Luka. No, put the anger towards Vlade. Let him have it. This isn't a us versus Luka thing. Luka is one of the funnest basketball players to watch in the world. I'm sorry. I don't care if my brother on this podcast disagrees. He makes basketball. He's made basketball fun for a lot of people in the league. And I know it's totally different to how Steph Curry operates, but they are the two most entertaining basketball players for me to watch. And I'd even throw Jokic in there and Giannis. Like, those five guys to me, you know, and LeBron and shit, but they bring such a high level basketball IQ and they win in such different ways and non-traditional ways and ways that isn't as popular. I mean, I just, a lot of those guys are below the rim players, and I relate more to below the rim players because, you know, I'm a 5'8" white guy that can't touch the rim. So when I see guys that aren't, you know, overwhelmingly athletic, like, and then Giannis on the opposite end, it'll be a similar for Wimby. Like, those are just freaks, like absolute freaks of human beings that I think are, it's really interesting to watch. So it's like I go for the under the rim guy or the freak, and those are the two, you know, everybody in the middle is fine, but. So I am not anti-Luka because, like I said, we were huge Luka advocates. So I'm not going to just turn around and hate the guy because our GM fucked up. No, that's lame to me. I don't care. Like, and fans that said Luka intentionally tried to hurt Malik Monk,
we gotta get into that one because that was one of the worst takes I have ever seen in my life. I read the tweet. I forgot who it was that tweeted it. I read the tweet and I was like, okay, I didn't really remember the play like that. Like, maybe he flopped into Malik and hurt him or whatever. I watched the replay and I was like, yep, that's a fucking terrible take. Like, Jesus, dude. Like, it's just like, you got so much anger
never
built up.
Before.
You're just like, no. You're just like, he literally flailed his arms because he got raked across the arm. And then he literally just like, Malik was trying to take a charge and he just fell on him.
Nothing malicious like about that play.
Absolutely nothing.
The other funny take was the NBA media take from one guy of like, the NBA media got what they wanted. They got the Kings into the, and it's just like, there is no vendetta that the NBA media has towards fucking Sacramento or the Kings. It's a small market that in compared to other media markets doesn't make them money. They're not going to give us time if we don't make them money. Like, people, it's not personal. Maybe it is. Like, no one gives a fuck about Sacramento. No one's going to give a fuck about Sacramento. That's the beauty of it. Embrace it. Stop worrying about what the fucking national media says about the Kings and Domantas Sabonis. The fact that he's so well hated amongst all NBA fan bases is something we should be relishing in and fucking embracing. That's awesome. We have a guy that gets under guy's skin and there's nothing bad about him. We're completely in the right. So enjoy it. If people want to be mad, let them fucking punch air. Let them go not touch grass for fucking 2 weeks. Let it happen. Embrace it. I think it's awesome. He might be the most hated player in the NBA for no reason.
Just
great.
Yeah, exactly.
Once we get a second star here, this team's going to be different. All right. That's the Vlade Maverick stuff. We need to get into Malik Monk. Malik Monk, 4 to 6 weeks, MCL sprain. This is why it wasn't the fact that we lost to the Mavericks twice. It was we lost to the Mavericks twice, and we lost Malik Monk for the rest of the season. Maybe he comes back in late. I just don't see it. I don't think Malik Monk's ever going
to
play.
Kings would have to. Someone mapped out the 4 to 6 weeks, and they said that if Malik would want to come back, it would have to be round two, and that's just not fucking happening.
And why would he risk that further damage that knee, actually tear it, and then miss out on the fucking max contract in the summer? Malik Monk's not playing another game for the Sacramento Kings again.
Dude.
Start embracing it now, people.
I know, man. And it's like,
just start embracing it now. It's going to be tough.
Any hope that the Kings had of convincing Malik Monk to take that 4-year $78 million or take that 1-year contract with the promise that he'll get more just completely went out the window with this injury, man. I mean, it had to be a stark reminder to the guy that was like 2 years in a row, his health has been phenomenal. He's due for a payday, gets hurt at the end of the season. There's no way he looks at this happening and is like, yeah, I'm going to take less.
I'm telling, as a Kings fan, Malik, go get your fucking money, dude. Like, don't come back here for a 4-year, $78 million deal, because maybe by year four, you'll be ready to win. Maybe, you know, it'll be a fun 3 years, but dude, go fucking make your money. If you want to come back here and finish your career with Fox, great, but it sucks, man. It really does, because I'm glad we kind of started. I'm glad we didn't come up with a better nickname, because
Because it's dying fast, dude. I mean, it's dead. It's dying fast, man. And it's just like, and we'll get back to this on like the Kings themselves. You know, I'm not ready to write off the season. Like, we our two best players are still healthy. They still need to be playing well. I mean, this is just a perfect opportunity for De'Aaron to say, well, you know, I've been a little lackluster since the first 2 months of the season. It's time for me to turn it up down the stretch, man. And it's like, that's what we need. And if Fox does that, it's like just another confidence booster going into the offseason, you know, man? Because it's like at this point, the three injuries that stacked up with Lyles, Herter, and Monk, and then you look at the season as a whole with the bad losses, you're like, fuck, making the play-in and winning and getting out of the play-in would be a decent result, man. And it's just like we have been in denial. We were in that we're the three seed last year mentality all year long. We're literally on almost the damn near the same win pace as we were last year. And we're just
last year was a down year.
Yeah. Last year was fucking last year, man. And it's like, I don't want to be like too like foresighted and like just completely right off at the end of the season, man. But it's just like, it's a depressing week, man. Two losses, the loss of Malik Monk. It's just bad all the way around, man. Bad vibes.
Yeah. On the opportunistic side, let's just celebrate where we get to bitch about the play-in.
Yeah,
we've been in denial all year. We knew this team. We didn't make any off-season moves. We wanted that. I was like, all right, just be patient. And we've been a patience pod. We've done really, really well watching Kings basketball this year. I think better than most in the sense of like just calm the fuck down. We're not winning this year. Why are we all worked up? I know it's a lot harder, but you know we weren't getting away. We didn't improve, and obviously the West just kind of came back. We've been a play-in team since the first game of the year, and we're probably a play-in team now. Like, did we really think that our two stars are better than KD and Booker? Because that's not the case, and our two stars are not better than Kyrie and Luka. That's the reality. It's a stars league. And these teams are, the Mavs are fucking hungry. And we're hungry too, but that's when those letdown losses suck. But once again, that's who we were. We weren't like as good as this basketball team has been the last 2 years. They haven't been that consistent at home. And that's been,
It's the biggest issue with this team in general is just the home letdowns, man. I mean,
but it really comes back to shooting, and this team can't win on nights they don't shoot the ball well for the most part.
We're a shooting team that doesn't really shoot the ball well.
Yeah. And that's with two B plus to A minus stars. And let's be clear, there's nothing wrong with Domantas Sabonis, but for this team to be a title contender, yeah, they have to go get Paul George. You know, they have to have Keegan Murray be a 25-point scorer. They're not getting it done with Fox and Sabonis. That's where the national media conversation is wrong. It should be, let's not try to pretend Sabonis is something that he's not, which we as Kings fans do try to push this narrative that he is. And it's like, no, he's not. He's the third best. He's better. If he's playing a Draymond role and is the third best player on a team, he's the best Draymond version of Draymond ever. You know, except Draymond's a better defender, but Sabonis is Draymond on steroids on offense. Like, let's walk back. I mean, he is an all-star, all-NBA third-team player. However, you need two dynamic 25, 30-point scorers. You need three good all-stars to win a title.
He's Chris Bosh, Kevin Love. He's not D-Wade, Kyrie level of star.
Exactly.
And it's like, going into this season, I mean, the Ringer guys were like, well, the Kings need to upgrade Domantas Sabonis if they ever want to take the next step. And it's like, no.
No, motherfucker. They need to upgrade the positions around him so we can hide his deficiencies. If he was playing with, once again, Jaren Jackson, for example, if they had a guy who had a 7-foot wingspan that was blocking shots, didn't really have to worry about rebound, was basically a roamer, a free player, he would cover, like, no one would be bitching about Sabonis. But the fact that Harrison Barnes is that fucking player is nonsense. And we know, like, once again, we were calling for, and then we went back and forth, try to, you know, talk ourselves into this, but we knew this team has limitations with Harrison Barnes being your fourth best player and your go-to matchup defender on the biggest, most athletic guys in the league. There's no fucking chance. There's just no chance. So Sabonis is a center for sure, but he's 6'10", so there's just limitations. We can't, you know, but that's where we're at. This, the Western Conference is so fucking loaded that until we get a third score that gets 25, this team has to shoot a crazy percentage from three, and they just, their spot-up shooters did not do that this year. They make a trade for Chris Duarte for backup bench help, brought absolutely nothing shooting-wise this year. Kevin Huerter, very inconsistent, still shot about 37%, but it was him, Harrison Barnes, and Keegan Murray, and they all did not shoot the ball well this year. And yeah, Keon, as much as Keon Ellis has been a bright spot, but like now the new conversation is Keon Ellis just being penciled in as the starter next year going in. And I'm not down with that. If the Kings don't make some significant moves in this roster, doesn't,
not a talent upgrade,
it's not shaken up. Like, fuck that. I don't want Keon Ellis going in like as our starting two guard going into the year. I think he's a good piece that could be a role player on this team for years to come, but that doesn't fire me up. Like, I expect, especially if Malik's gone, this team's going to look a lot different next year. Obviously, Fox, Sabonis, and Keegan aren't going anywhere, but everybody else is on the chopping block, and I wouldn't be surprised if Monty fucking overhauled. Like, and he was just been trying to keep the vibes high of this team, knowing this is a young team that really, I don't think, was ready to make a bunch of changes, because it's kind of proven that Fox and Sabonis, they haven't figured out that winning formula and how to win on nights they need to win. Like, that's part of the progression as stars. Like, they might not come till they're 29, 30 years old. The great thing is they're basically the same age and are going to be able to grow together. And then the caveat is Malik Monk not being able to, potentially not being able to grow with those guys as well. And so if Malik's not here, there could be seven new guys on this roster, realistically.
The whole bench could get overhauled. I mean, it's like
completely overhauled. Davion's a free agent. They just gave a deal to Keon, so I'm confident. Actually, if they make a trade, anybody's open, so I don't think anybody's safe. And I think Monty's going to make a trade or do something pretty drastic, because if he doesn't, yeah, then it will be time to start getting a little bit more, heating up that conversation a little bit more. But I'm really confident in Monty McNair. I don't think he's the problem. I think this is what was going to happen this year. And at the end of the day, I know I'm on a rant. I'm fucking all fired up. But at the end of the day, we get to watch playoff basketball. Whether it's, I know play-in basketball isn't playoff basketball, I would argue and could go on a whole rant of why the play-in is bad for the league and really, really stupid. I don't really want to do that. Yeah, if we lose to the Lakers or the Warriors, will that suck? Yeah, it really will. But knowing my team is in the playoffs back-to-back years, and we're not going home worried about lottery conversations, like, we're still just as unhappy as we are in life, because we're just figuring out ways to be unhappy watching basketball. And it's like, zoom out for a bit. This is the most fun I've ever had watching NBA basketball this year. We did it. We started a podcast because of it. We talked every single week, multiple nights a week at times about it. Like, that's what I want to appreciate here. Like, every single night I was excited to watch the Kings this year.
I'm still excited.
Whether they just fucking lost back-to-back games to the Mavs and have a little bit of dinner plans tonight, so I don't know if I'll get to even watch tonight, but I
couldn't believe how early you texted me this morning.
I'm pulling out my phone too many times, huh?
I couldn't believe you texted me so early this morning. You said you were going out with Spence last night. I got a text from you like 7:30. I was like, fuck, man, this dude's up and out.
Dude, me and Spence, we got, you know what, we came to the realization is I'm not smoking weed before going to the bars anymore.
Is that your realization?
Yeah, and I knew this, and I've always known this to be true, but last night just reinforced it again. Like, I'm feeling really, really good. Drank a couple seltzers, we're pre-gaming. May have had a little fun guy in there in the shape of a, what is it? Kind of the, I can't really describe, without using the word, I cannot describe what it would look like, but Mario really loves them.
Does he?
And so we were feeling great, and so then we go outside, like, oh, yeah, you want to smoke? Yeah, I'll smoke a joint. And then we smoked a joint. We literally get to the place, and we're just like, Spence got tossed so quickly. It was great.
Well, I mean, when you're making when you're mixing the Marios with the alcohol, man, you don't know what you're gonna get.
And then you add weed, and the weed just comes and throws it all. That's where the variable really comes in. It's like the science project that everything's in control, and then it just starts fizzing and shit's going haywire, and you're like, okay, this is the volcano that I needed to erupt, yeah. And that's what the weed does.
We call that double damage right there. That's what we call double damage.
So we dipped at like 12, came back to my spot. We both got I got tacos out. He got fries or nachos, some carne asada nachos from this taco truck. And then we literally get back to my pad, and he's like, dude, I'm still so fucking hungry. I'm like, yeah, me too. We order wings and onion rings at fucking 2 a.m. And they were fire, dude. It was like, wow, I have a 24-hour wing spot now here. That wasn't bad. This was sick. But I paid for it this morning.
The stomach was not feeling hot.
Tacos and wings
and mushrooms, dude. That's all bad. It's all bad.
Yeah, it was decent. It was actually a pretty chill night because we didn't take a whole lot. I literally maybe took
cap or two,
half a gram. So,
yeah. Dude, that's chiller as fuck, honestly. And that's low key the best way to do it when you want to go out. You know, just take a little bit. I mean, I'm very bad about that when I have like. I'll have like a whole eighth in front of me and I'm like, I'm just going to take a gram. And then the next thing you know, I just eat the whole fucking bag.
I'm so good. This is the one, it's like the best substance I have the most control with. So it's like, I love my relationship with it. And then last night, the weed ruined it. Honestly, I was feeling really good and I still was good after the weed, but just like, I was a little bit more loose and a little too intrusive, but trying to be social. And it wasn't a good formula.
Night. Well, people, you know, we're sitting here having a conversation about our night last night. You know, we were pitching to each other. You know, I literally sent Caleb a text and I was like, Michael Conforto, King of the Week. That's where we're at with the Kings, man. Like,
Should we just talk dragons?
We're just unattached. House of Dragons preview. People, we're doing a pod on House of the Dragons. Get fucking ready. It's going to be badass. But we were just like, dude, should we talk Giants? Should we talk House of the Dragons? Like, we were like, fuck, man. The Kings have been killing us this week. It was both the games. You know what the real problem was, Caleb? That these losses weren't sandwiched in between a win. You know, if the Kings played Monday, lost, played Wednesday against whoever, won, and then lost to the Mavericks again on Friday, it wouldn't be such a doomsday type of thing. But fuck, man. 0-2 against a team that went 2-0 against us that we needed to lose while we win. It was just, man. Frustrating all the way around. We took out our anger on Vlade. But I mean, is there anyone else that deserves our wrath, Caleb? I mean, it was a tough week.
Not really. No. I mean, this is who, like, once again, I think we've been in denial as a fan base a lot of the year. Not really looked in the mirror. Obviously, Monty could be up for blame, but I don't love to do that because I'm not qualified to do it. And
I would very much hate,
you know, like, I'm not that mad. Like, you know, I just
knee-jerk reaction if the Kings lose in the play-in and fire Vlade would be, or not Vlade, fuck. I wish we could fire him twice. If we fire Monty, dude, it would just be like, fuck, dude, the Kangs are back. That would just be a full Kangs move. Yep. Literally, we're already over 41 wins. We're going to be over 500. This would be the second best season second best season we've had in almost two decades. The Kings would get antsy. It would just be total Kangs. And it's like, we always talk about the drought, like it's not Vivek. That's all, like the non-drought years are all post Vivek's ownership. But like Vivek owned the team for over half of the playoff drought. So it's like, he's just as much invested in this Kangs nonsense as anybody else, you know? So it's like,
and he's had money the whole time. The Maloof's just fucking their business.
Yeah. They went
just
went broke.
They were just shady people. So like there was a ticking time bomb anyway. Vivek just might be bad. You know, he has all the resources and is just like that. It's all optics too. Like I think he has done a lot in the community and is pretty well liked. And
I mean, he's the anti Giants ownership. I mean, the Giants ownership has done so many great things on the field, but they have been so bad off the field lately with all of the shit that's been going on. And Vivek's the opposite.
But the expectation is being San Francisco, like that whole area is it's the identity politics of it all is the number one priority. So we have very, very high expectations because we're a San Francisco baseball team. So anything, and there's been a lot of shady shit, but you're right that the ownership's done. We even had the Larry Bear incident. It's for a team that is should be is probably more focused on PR and than any other organization.
I mean,
in
woke
the country,
capital of the country,
bro.
It's owned by a Trump supporter.
It is crazy that they have kind of literally one PR nightmare after another. That is very, yeah. It's very Trump-esque how it happens too. It's kind of funny. But yeah, it is like the duality of Northern California franchises right now. They're all kind of in a struggle. We as Northern Californians collectively as fans, and maybe it's just I'm speaking out of my ass and it's everywhere, but we have a lot of entitlement, a lot of expectations that are just dumb. And maybe, like I said, it's probably everybody in across the world. So this is where I'm like, so Monty's probably like, fuck, dude, social media is ruining my job. Because I'm getting all the access the fans think they have and all the pressure they do. Like the media and all these voices and
cyberbullying work.
Virality. There's a lot of noise, but some of it cuts through, especially to an owner like Vivek, who was a very knee-jerk reactionary, kind of trying to be trendy in some ways. It's interesting. So I don't know. I'm not for it. Once again, I expect there to be drastic changes to this roster come the summer. And if there's not, then that's when I think we as fans are entitled to be like, all right, what the fuck's going
all right,
on?
It's all right. This is 2 years in a row. We haven't really done anything like what the fuck. So what the fuck's the next move? And you know, it's funny you thinking of next moves. I was looking this morning, and apparently the Clippers have no interest in re-signing Paul George. And Bavada dropped their line on who is the most likely to sign Paul George. And, you know, this is a dream scenario for me just because how high level of a player Paul is. God, just a dream scenario. But we are number 2 on the list.
Tied with the Knicks.
Tied with the Knicks behind the 76ers on the most likely team
+930
to land Paul George. And that would be fucking awesome. I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves here. Way ahead of ourselves. But
I'd rather have this conversation than I'm not ready to preview Warriors situation in the plane. I don't even really want to talk about these next games. I don't want to talk about what actually happened. So let's just fantasize about Paul George.
Because
that's
Paul
all Kings
George.
Twitter's done this
oh
morning.
Oh my God, dude. It's so funny that we like, as Kings fans, we kind of just like, we just self-attach ourselves to these guys. Like it's kind of like the Kyle Kuzma thing this offseason is like, that really just picked up steam on social media. Like a couple Kings guys posted it and it just got bird talked through the whole organization that like Kuzma's the guy that everybody's looking for. And then Monty's getting asked questions about him and he's like, what the fuck? Like that's not even close to like what the actual situation is, but I can't wait for this offseason where everyone's going to be like, all right, Monty, you know, Paul George, you know, that's a player that we want, you should target. And he's like, you know, Paul has had no interest in the Kings and I haven't heard anything from him, but
is going to go on his podcast. De'Aaron Fox is going to go on his podcast and everyone's gonna be like, oh, De'Aaron, like Paul George got De'Aaron. They just started following each other and they tagged each other on Instagram. Like that shit's going to happen. Like, and I can't wait to play that, but that's already the mindset I'm getting myself into because once again, I'm not ready. And I think next week's pod, after we have a full week of
decompression
and sitting on this. Yeah. Just getting out of it. I'm trying not to think about it. We have, you know, March Madness going on. Baseball just started. We've kind of been on a Giants high this week, which they're going to end up 2-2. But there's always a nice buzz about MLB opening week. It's the most intensely I probably watch and pay attention. And then it starts to trail off. And it goes in ebbs and flows throughout the baseball season.
Long fucking season.
Literally, like, you can't even think about this your team as a team right now. Like you got to get through 50 games before you can even draw an assessment. So if this was a baseball pod, I don't even know how you approach a baseball pod. I still think it's hard to approach a basketball pod because there's 82 games, but fuck.
I know. How do you go wide scope in the first 60 games of the season?
I was thinking about how would we recap the first Giants week of the season?
Yeah, like would we go game by game?
Reacting to anything. Like,
yeah, dude, like.
Yeah, like Jung Hoo Lee is rookie of the year. Like, dude, just poised at the plate, just looks like a pro's pro. And then it's like 3 weeks,
like it's
3 weeks later. Yeah, 3 weeks later, he's on a slump and he's back hitting like 230. And we're like, fuck, forget everything I just said. And then he gets hot 1 week, it's and back over 300. And we're like, fuck, where are we at, dude? Baseball is weird, man, because it's like you can have a legit, like, good, like 3 months. And then just fall off a cliff and end of the year.
60 games.
Yeah, and at the end of the year, just like be hitting 230. And you're like, fuck, dude, I was hitting like, I was literally Patrick Bailey last year. He came in first 60 games.
Chapman.
He batted over 300. And then he literally ended the year and he was like barely batting better than Joey Bart just because it's like he just went on a little bit of a cold streak. Fucking baseball is weird.
The reason Matt Chapman's a Giant is because of his second half last year.
Yep.
It was awful.
Yep.
But back to the Kangs. Let's just get to segments, man. Like, we got everything out. We both went on a few rants there, and we had done a good job on this pod. I mean, I've just been having little ticky tack rants that haven't been really that. A lot of them have been league pass rants or ranting at the fans and not like the play as much. But we really kind of once again didn't even go at the play. We just went at all the optics
which I think... Hey, we're not stats and analysts, guys. We are men. We make takes.
We're just fiends.
We're fiending for good hoops. And fuck, you know, if we waited and did this later today and we had a good game against the Jazz, we would be a lot calmer. But nah, man, this is an emotions pod. I hope we lose tonight, so you're real pissed off listening to us on Monday, and we're just feeding the anger. And you're like, oh man,
no,
fuck Lottie.
If we lose tonight, no one will listen Monday. So we actually need them to win.
True.
And they're gonna listen Monday and be like, fuck you guys. You guys are all negative right
fuck
now.
Negative ass motherfuckers, man. It's just man.
All right. So who are we even playing? No, we're playing the fucking Jazz.
Playing the Jazz. Which,
at home? We could fucking lose.
Oh, absolutely. We could lose. One thing on the play-in, though, because, you know, we said we have a little bit mixed emotions about the play-in and whatever. You know, the Houston Rockets would have started tanking like a month ago if the play-in wasn't a thing. And they have won 11 of their last 13 games just right on the heels of the 10 seed. And it's just
scary.
It's just so funny because the optics are like, dude, if they get into the play-in to the end of the year, no matter what happens, just absolute fucking success of a season. And then the Kings backslide 100%. Into the eighth spot from the sixth spot in the last 3 weeks of the season. And we're like, absolute failure. This team fucking collapsed. And it's like, then you look at the rosters and you're like, well, you know, there's not as much of a difference here. I think we got a little bit more of seasoned talent on our team. But from a talent perspective, I really don't think we're that far ahead of them.
Dude, they're going to be really good next year. I think they're once again, all of these West teams are built for the next 5 to 10 years. The Clippers are probably the one team, and the Suns, you're like, okay, those two teams, but those are the two teams that could just kind of constantly get stars. Same with the Lakers and the Warriors, and they can rebuild in 1 year. All these other small market teams have built through the draft, have stacked picks. Even Minnesota, people were like, once again, trading for Rudy Gobert was, I thought that was the stupidest thing ever. It's proving to work. They're won six in a row without Cat. I think, or I don't know if they've won six in a row, but they're still in first, even without Cat. I forget how many games he's already been out, but that team might just be better. They could move on. They could probably move on from Cat, get another few really good wing guys and be totally fine. Because they know who they are. They have a really good identity and it works, and they have the athletes to fucking do it. But they're not going anywhere. OKC still has a million picks and they are already the best young roster in the league. Denver's not going anywhere. The Pelicans, all young up and coming guys that they've built through the draft. Kings, pretty similar. You know, they made the Sabonis trade. And then you have Dallas, who kind of built through the draft. And then once you acquire a top five superstar, getting the second top five superstar is a lot easier. So they are able to get Kyrie. And you're just looking around, you're like, okay, there's not a whole lot of room for any of these teams to drop off. Like, there's no aging team in the top six, right? I guess the Suns are, and you really, those three teams, the Suns, Warriors, and Lakers, and you can maybe even throw the Clippers in there. Actually, you can't throw the Clippers in there, but those stars we want to push out of the league, and they're not ready to be pushed out. So there's two dualities of the Western Conference. Is you have the guys that have done it and have all the resumes, and then you have the new generation of ultra-talented superstars that are better talent-wise. Like, this new generation crop is... Like, Che doesn't look like anybody, because Che's one of those generational players that you're like, holy shit, he's going to influence a whole generation of players, and they're going to be better for it going forward. It's just the evolution of the NBA, why generations aren't comparable. The modern-day athlete keeps getting bigger, stronger, faster, and better with the ball. You could say basketball IQ and hard work and work ethic are the two caveats, but as far as talent and just sheer skill, it gets better every single
generation. Well, I don't even know if it's like a work ethic thing, because it's even harder to get into the league than it's ever been. I mean, it's just like,
for sure.
I mean, how many guys in the D League would have been rotational players in the 90s, you know, just based off of their athleticism and skill? It's like, it's just the league just continues to evolve and get better. And I mean, it's like, it's just so hard to, like you said, it's so hard to compare generations, because every generation brings something new to the game, brings something different, and it helps evolve the game. And it's like,
it's evolution.
What is the Wimby and Chets, those type of body types, how are they going to influence the next generation of 7-footers even more than the Sabonises, the Jokic's, and the Embiid's were influenced by the modern league? It's just like, it's going to be completely, I mean, 20 years from now, it's going to be like, no one on the floor is going to be under 6'5", because just everyone continues to get more skilled.
There's very few things that just stay the same. Like, the most constant thing in life is change.
And besides San Andreas.
Dude, I literally had this exact conversation with my parents on yesterday. I was making the joke about I compare pickup basketball to surfing, just because I try to take that mentality to not encroach, especially in Santa Cruz. There's a huge local surf culture. It's very, out of all of the surfing in California, this is probably going to be the most contentious and pretentious in a way of, it's very protected. This is like the last, they call it the last surf ghetto. And
don't
like
fuck up my wave, man.
Exactly. However, well, looking at it from a basketball perspective, I'm like, oh shit, that's the same thing of when you got a good run going with about 10, 15 guys that constantly in rotation, you're playing once a week, and you own a court, quote unquote, you have the key to the gym, or you all have memberships, whatever, you're paying to be there. Everyone, especially if you're at like a 24-hour fitness or any local gym, like even SJSU, and we had our runs there, you know, everybody had the right to be there. However, there was a hierarchy, and there was some protection of that. It's like, oh, you know, I'm here to get a workout in. I don't want to just play one or two games so you all can fucking learn the game. Like, I want to go have the 10 best players be on the court as long as time as possible, because that's selfishly, I love basketball. It's like flow state. It's like, no, I don't think about anything. Like, it's one of those, and those two things in particular, for me, are the most the two complete escapes from life for me, that are sobering, that are physical activities. Like, those are my two favorite escaping points. How so? There's a you're instinctively like, this is, oh, I get so much from this, so I want to protect this as much as I can, and I want to have the best experience every single time. So I was having this conversation with my parents about Santa Cruz and how it's like these one of the last true cities in California, beach cities, that's still trying to protect its local community and really the whole Central Coast. And working at KSBW and local news has actually opened me up and been more optimistic towards local news and why it really is pretty important. And the joke that I made, I was like, it's literally true in everything. There's 30 years from now, stuff changes, except Calaveras County. And that was my exception. So that was a very long lead up to the punchline, but I literally was like, everything changes in every industry, you know, geography, you know, people that occupied the land 100 years before us were living different lives than we're living now. Except Calaveras County.
We're stuck in the 70s here, baby.
Yes, sir. Okay, let's get to some segments. I think there's two Beam Bandits. Which one do you want to take? I'm going to go Kyrie because he decided that the Kings were... as much as Luka, Kyrie is the alpha on this team. And even Luka's jokingly kind of said it in the press conference. Not really the alpha, but maybe the closer is the better term. And I hate that. I hate those terms. I hate both those terms anyway. But the run Kyrie went on in the third quarter basically told me, okay, yeah, this dude wants to win. I haven't seen this dude this engaged since the LeBron.
Right to left-handed switch layup that he had in the second half was one of the most disgusting. Oh, he made it look so fucking easy. It was just one of the most disgusting plays.
It looked like he was playing with toddlers out there the way he moved it. I was just like, how is he doing that?
He was just jab stepping and fucking pivoting just Keon Ellis and De'Aaron to death. Was just putting them in positions they did not want to be in, going by them, pulling up. He's one of the smoothest players I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he probably isn't the smoothest player I've ever seen. I mean, just between the handles and the finish.
They have a real shot to win.
Oh, yeah. Out of the non-Denver teams, I think they have a better shot than anybody in any conference to find their way to the Western Conference.
That's why
finals.
I didn't even want to talk about the play in this game, because this is just a flat-out better team. There was, you know, I texted you midway through the third. I was like, when both of them are cooking, like, there's no chance. Maybe the Celtics are the only team I could be like, yeah, they could beat them if both of those guys are cooking, because the Celtics have the firepower. But when Luka and Kyrie clear out and then just get jump shots for Hardaway, he's going to hit threes, Kleba,
PJ Washington,
and probably other Beam Bandits we're leaving out. PJ Washington.
No, PJ Washington is my Beam Bandit because I wanted him so bad. And, you know, this is my whole, you know,
the John Collins,
we're just stacking fucking second round picks for what? And I'm just at the deadline. I just watched all these guys like PJ Washington get traded for second round picks. And I'm like, PJ would have been sick next to Sabonis, you know? And it's like them getting Gafford are just completely changed the trajectory of that team. It's like argument where it's like getting redder around the edges can make everybody better and make the roster have a higher ceiling. Those are the type of players. And this is the type of example that I was talking about. They look like a completely different team after the trade deadline. And I don't know if it's a mentality thing where it's like the front office believes in us. They're adding these players. We need to buy in as a unit because we can do it type of thing. And I just, those are the reasons why it's like the anti-chemistry breakup ideology where it's like, you don't want to break up the chemistry of this team. We ran it back for a reason. We want to build the vibes.
It's not that. It's this. Do you think if P.J. Washington was on the Kings right now and Dallas didn't have P.J. Washington, that it would have made a difference in these two games? Because I don't at all. That's where my whole point was about Keon Ellis. It's my point about there was OG Anunoby. That was the guy that could make a difference in a series like this. Or not a series, but a two-game stretch. Like, that's where what the structural issue for this team, yes, they need depth guys. And the wrong national media conversation that's being had is the Kings need to replace Domantas Sabonis. But the reality is the Kings don't have a second 25-point scorer and are a scoring team. And they can't beat teams like this. They can't. So PJ Washington, who else was a guy we would have been sick?
Royce O'Neal.
Royce O'Neal. Like, sweet. Yeah, it would be great, but I don't think any of those minor moves, it doesn't change the fact that when teams double Domantas Sabonis, he's not going to get 25 in a game. He can't do that. That's not what we want him to do anyway. So for us, De'Aaron isn't on the same level of Luka, and he's probably not even on the same level of Kyrie. When Kyrie's fully engaged, like he was in these two games and decided that Luka didn't decide they were winning those games. Kyrie decided he was winning those games, and that was decided in the third quarter of the first game. Kyrie has won a title. He's played literally the in the most pressure situations, hit the biggest shots that one could ever hit.
I mean, I think he is the fucking shot of the decade.
Guy. Shot of the decade. Kyrie Irving, if PJ Washington's on our team and Royce O'Neal's on our team and we got a backup point guard at the deadline, doesn't matter. If Kyrie decided that they wanted to win those two games, him and Luka was cooking right there with him, which he was, there's nothing with Kings we're going to do about that. Until they get 25-point scorer, I know we're completely just went back on this conversation, but I think it's good.
It's a caveat.
We're in the middle of segments. We're trying to be positive during segments, but that's what happens during B-Bandit sometimes. And this is not a knock on Sabonis at all. This is just the opportunity we have to get better. Because if we bring a 25-point scorer in, it's not going to change Domantas Sabonis' game one bit. He could be a walking triple-double just as easily. It's not a either or. It's a just plus. You know, or did I say that right? Either.
It's not a one or the other.
It's not a one or the other. It's yes, exactly. It's an either or. Yeah. So that's what it is like that, and not to completely shit on PJ Washington and shit on the Kings not making moves, but that was the thing to me was there wasn't Monty knows he's got to go get a second guy, and until Keegan is that guy, which it might not be 5 years, and Keegan it never isn't that guy, but I do think it's going to take some time. I still believe it. Nothing has wavered off of that. However, if we want to curb some of these expectations that we're starting to build as fans, and Monty does start to feel that, the move would be like, okay, I can't fuck around with making role player moves. Like, I got to go get another star. Or
yep.
And the big
caveat on trying to get a star is that the Kings need to make the fucking play in and need to make the playoffs so that we can get so that that Hawks first round pick can get seeded to them. Because if we miss the playoffs this year, we'll get our pick back, but that just means our first round picks for the next 3 years again are locked up and we can't do anything with them. So by making the playoffs, submitting that playoff protected first round pick to Atlanta that we got from the Herder deal would open up every draft pick that we have in the future. And that's the biggest offseason caveat to the Kings playing or not playing. Because, you know, if the Kings win the play-in, go to the first round, get swept by the Nuggets, I really don't think it moves the needle from this team's perspective on what they really thought they needed to accomplish this season. Like, I don't think making out of the play-in and then getting swept would make anyone feel good in that locker room, which it shouldn't. But getting that first round, getting our future first round picks back was going to be huge in the offseason. Because, I mean, the odds of getting a difference maker or an asset in the mid first round is just, this isn't the NFL, man. Like, we need Atlanta to have that first round pick so that we can unlock all of those picks so we can go asset hunting. And I'm not saying it needs to be a forward like we want or a rim protector. We just need a talent upgrade to this roster. Someone that slides in between Domantas and De'Aaron.
And you're not upgrading. So there's three positions, right? You don't need to go upgrade your point guard. You don't need to go upgrade your center. But you do need to upgrade the one, two, or the two, three, or four spot.
One of those spots.
Because Keegan can slide either or. So that's what's cool about Keegan is he's interchangeable pretty much in two positions. And shit, I mean, him and Paul George could play together on the wing and they could still slide another four into the mix too if they really, really wanted to and wanted to get bigger up front. Like, if we're talking Paul George fantasy still. But, and shit, I mean, like I said, I don't mind sacrificing Keegan another few years if it means we get a star in here. And it's not going to hurt Keegan's growth whatsoever. I think he's going to be one of those guys. Like, I think had this take earlier in the year is I think he's going to improve in his 30s, right? I think he's just that. He has that type of makeup as a player to me of, okay, I'm going to I don't know how to do this now, or maybe you didn't ask me, but now that you, like, everything that Mike Brown's asked him to do this year, he's slowly kind of like accomplished it. Outside of maybe living up to the expectation of shooting the three the way he did last year, but that's all he fucking did last year. He had one thing to focus on, and I definitely think his 3-point's going to go way up next year again and be more close to that rookie year. But The point was, this was a Bean Bandit conversation, and the point was, is I thought Kyrie Irving decided that he wanted to win those two games, and I think he's really committed to making this work with Luka. And this, all this does was submit that Luka and Fox, there would have been plenty of room for them to play together. So I won't even get into that one.
Well, dude, you know, because people were always worried about the ball dominance of Luka, but Sabonis is just as ball dominant, just as focal in the center of the offense than Luka would have been. And it's just like Fox would have played off him perfectly fine. You know, let's back off the doomsday shit. This is going to get me pissed off before we get off the podcast.
Do we even want to be optimistic? I don't even have a king of the week.
Nah, neither do I. But we got a couple of Mark's mantras, though. I mean, Mark yeah, throughout Mark, you're a funny fucking guy. And it was so funny. This joke just hits so much better because all of the talk about Luka losing weight going into the offseason and blah, 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 blah. And he's still a little bit chubby, but he looks a mile better than he did last year. But just randomly in the middle of the game, Luka was at the free throw line, and Mark and Katie are talking to each other. And Mark goes, I had an insider source tell me that he spotted Luka on the off day at the local Golden Corral. And he said this with the most straight Mark Jones voice ever. And like Katie was like dying laughing. And she was like, oh, come on, Mark. Like it was like when he made the joke I can't think of his name, but he said he was like 80 years old. But he was just like, he just dead straight said, oh, I had an insider source to tell me they spotted Luka at the local Golden Corral this week. And I was just like, dude, this man just made a fucking fat joke about Luka as he's torching us in the middle of the fucking game.
And called him cheap. It was a double-edged fucking sword. Yep, it was like, yeah, Luka's kind of
cheap
fat
ass.
And like, yeah, you're kind of cheap, dude. Like a fucking Golden Corral. Like that's where my dad wants to eat. Like if my dad had his pick, we'd go to fucking Golden Corral over fucking Outback. I don't even have a good comparison to Golden Corral rather have. That is a chain that's actually good. I'm just not a chain restaurant guy. So that's
let's go
it
to,
is
let's go to BJ's,
crazy
man.
That NBA, like I don't eat that shit. Like I don't think I've ever ate at like Golden Corral willingly. Like, hey, I'm gonna go to a Golden Corral. So that's just funny. Luka's a simple man. That's why. I mean, I'm not gonna spend my. I'm not gonna waste energy hating Luka Doncic. I just don't have it. I just like him, man. I know he bitches a lot, which is whatever, but it doesn't bug me that much. I mean,
we watch
like
Boogie, man. You loved to bitch at the refs. If you weren't afraid that if you got a technical, you would get pulled out of the game for a fucking month in high school, you would have gotten quite a few techs.
I was on such thin ice anyway. So like, if I got a tech, like I didn't get any techs in high school because I bitched every time. I was wearing on them. That was the one thing I was just like, I have to keep my cool. Cause yeah, I wouldn't start for 2 weeks after that.
Fucking Hodson. I'll never.
The other Mark sponsor was good. I don't even know who had a block, who the block was on, but he hit him with I'm just going to use it. I'm going to use Sabonis. And this is Sabonis threw that back, like throwback Thursday or some shit. I was like, damn, Mark, really digging into the IG back from 10 years ago.
Fuck, we complain about that shit. You know how like some of these announcers are like basically like just pulling like TikTok one-liners out, but Mark's just so good at that. He's so good at it, though.
He is good at it. I do blame him right now for how bad Kyle Draper is, just because like Mark is the definition of someone that is just trying to be hip and cool, which he is kind of hip and cool, but even Katie was making fun of him because he wears Gucci and Louis Vuitton. It's like there's no reason for I've just never seen a play-by-play local play-by-play broadcaster talking about with kids.
He's always talking about Mike's Jordans and shit too. He's always talking about Mike's shoes. And I mean, it's like I kind of do love that because it's like there's a little bit different. Man.
It's just a little too try hard, but I still love Mark Jones. Just a little too try hard.
No one does.
Because it's a trickle down effect.
No one does announcing like he can do it. Crook and Kipe, though. Like how Crook and Kipe can just talk baseball and then just
That literally game two where they panned over to the gym in San Diego, and just that whole conversation with Krupp and Kite was so fucking funny about them I'm the one on the left. just talking about gym bros. And it's just like
Matt, did you see Matt Ford's tweet?
Yeah, he goes,
that's my gym.
He goes, that's my gym. Oh, dude. And then like the Giants page literally like photoshopped Krupp and Kipe's heads onto those guys. And it was like Krupp and Kipe in the studio today. I'm just like, dude, these dudes are just so fucking good.
I wonder the first time they like decided they could had the free reign to do that. Cause it's like a stand up comic doing crowd work. Like you have all your material in front of you. And there's a lot of comedians that'll focus on crowd work, and some are just punchlines and jokes and being able to storytell and stuff. But the crowd work is interesting because you don't have to do any crowd work, but you could do all crowd work if you wanted. And it's another way to entertain and make fun of and roast people. And that's all Krupp and Kipe are doing is fucking crowd work live on a broadcast and filling time on baseball. But they do make fun of people and like in the most polite and just like hilarious, like old sweet old guy way. And dude, we've just been so blessed. I give everything to those guys. They're the whole reason we have a podcast. Like if I was, and I don't know how you feel about it, because I don't know if you ever had the dream of like working in broadcast media like how I have, and it's been a pretty ridiculous path like that I've taken to it. But really deep down inside, it comes back to those guys, like just being able to hook me in as a 7-year-old, being able to like, I started listening to talk radio because of them. And
yeah, talking baseball and so with Marty Laurie, like just
talking
just
baseball.
It's the OGs
the
of
by the bay.
I fucking love
Marty
Laurie.
The man.
I mean, he's
God.
Like,
he's such a wholesome guy. I forget about Marty Laurie sometimes.
I just
he's like
love
Gary Gerald. Like they kind of get lost for me, and then I'm like, oh, I love them so much. Like,
I just love a good old baseball historian, man. Like, and that's just Marty Laurie is. Like, you just turn on you just turn on Talking Baseball
with
Marty Laurie, and he's just like talking about like 1955 Giants, New York Giants baseball, and like, I'm like, dude, this is just like trip in a time machine.
I'm gonna
call
into Marty Laurie tonight. I hope he's on today. I'm gonna throw on KBR. I'm gonna call in.
Like, Marty, I just want to hear your voice.
Marty, I have nothing to offer. I didn't even watch the game today, but man, Marty, you know, first time, long time.
You're the fucking guy.
Dude, you're the man, Marty. Can you just tell me everything's going to be okay? Even not even baseball, just in life, Marty. I just need some, wisdom from you.
Fucking A. Yeah.
All right, dude. We could have been having a completely different conversation today and we would have swung so far to the opposite end and been like, this team's going to win a fucking series. Like, if we would have beat the Mavericks twice, we'd have been like, we could win a first round series.
Oh, yeah, we could.
That
would have
been the discourse.
Fuck yeah, we could.
Why not us?
Sky's the fucking limit, baby.
Why not us?
If we can avoid Denver, we can make it to the Western Conference Finals, I believe it.
Oh, and I can't wait. We're going to go on a 2-game win streak, and then we're going to have the conversation about us trying to figure out the 7-8 matchup. Playing Denver, OKC, or Minnesota, which Minnesota's got both those teams by half a game right now. It is crazy. So we are going to get back into this, just not this week.
Just not this week.
So just beat the fucking Jazz.
Fuck yeah.
Hopefully we got a dub. We beamed. We have any predictions for tonight?
Hopefully a pissed off Kings squad, but you know, my prediction is big lull. It's going to be a grinder of a game. The Kings are not going to run away with it. We're going to be stressed the whole fucking time. It's just like, it's the post Malik news. It's going to be, everyone's going to be a little dreary down in the dumps.
I need 40 from Fox.
Dude, I need something.
I need
40
from Fox.
I need something from Fox. This is a challenge to you. King of the week next Sunday has to be you.
Please.
Please. For the love of Fox.
I don't want to blame you really for anything. I don't think this is your fault. Like I'm not ready for that. In a couple years, yeah. But you're still learning. But please, come on. We need it.
King of the week.
We need it, sir.
All right. Good
pod. Peace.